I'm Gab.
He's Jules.
This is it. This is Wembley. This is the final of Euro 2021 coming up in, what, 72 hours, 96 hours? Who cares? It's the next game. It's the last game of the tournament. As you can see, it's cloudy. That's my weather report, Jules. Let's get right into it. We've had the semifinals.
Yeah.
And it's going to be England and Italy in the final.
Yes.
Hit me. Italy versus Spain. We got to talk about that first, yeah?
What a game. I thought this was the best game of the tournament. I'm talking quality, I'm talking suspense, scenario of the game, everything better than the Spain-Croatia, the France-Switzerland, any game we've seen before. I thought it was fantastic from start to finish.
I made the point, I wrote a story about this, and I said, sometimes both things can be true in football. It can be true that Italy did not deserve to win that game because Spain outplayed them, and it can be true that Italy deserved to be in the final for what they've shown throughout the tournament.
Yeah, of course. And there's a way you can't compete with the ball with Spain. No one can, certainly not in Europe, maybe Brazil and Argentina, but not in Europe. So why would you try to play their game? Play your game, even if that means suffering, even if that means running after the ball.
Well, because that's not Italy's game
ball.
That's why
that's not Italy. Yeah, but you can be adaptable.
Italy are set up to try to keep the ball in possession, to press intermittently and whatever. That is what they've done throughout the tournament. It just happens this is one area of the game that Spain is better. You nailed it when you said whoever dominates the midfield.
Yeah.
Spain went out, dominated the midfield.
Incredible.
Key thing as well, I think the decision not to start with Morata, with Ferran Torres and Oyarzabal and Dani Olmo, that just gave them more ballers. You add Jordi Alba, you don't have the outlet of Spina, and it's all one way.
You're right, and Pedri at 18 years old. I mean, in a semi-final of the Euros, I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before, like Luis Enrique said after the game. But great teams are adaptable. And that's what I liked about this Italian team. And yeah, maybe they can play this game another 9 times and not winning any of those 9s. But the one that they won was the most important. And I just think they showed a different side of them, where they were solid defensively despite the chances that you concede. And you were very efficient and clinical up front and could have even maybe scored a second goal. And I think that's a great asset to have. And for Spain, they will come back. And maybe had Spain be a bit more adaptable, they might not have conceded the goal that Chiesa scored, because they might have been a bit more cautious at times. And maybe for the next competition, they will learn from this and be a bit more adaptable.
Yeah, I think that the difficulty with Spain that I have is, and as you know, I've been on the Lucho bandwagon throughout, is simply been the consistency. And people have said, oh, well, they're not clinical enough. Oh, bad Morata. Although he looked like good Morata when he scored, of course. I think there's more to it than that. I think this would work as a club side, when you can actually work on it, when you can actually refine movements. With the national team side, it's not ideally suited to them, so you will have those pauses. And that's why they didn't look this good in the tournament. But man, when they were firing on all cylinders, they were a sight to behold.
Definitely.
The other semifinal, England and Denmark. I think in some ways, look, every neutral was pulling for Denmark. I think we can lift the lid.
Yeah,
like, nobody wanted to see England in the final unless they're English, right? And rightly so, because Denmark were the underdogs and whatever. And once Denmark took the lead, I thought, uh-oh. Southgate hasn't had to come from behind in this tournament. No. They're going to have to come out. Are they going to be able to do it?
I agree with you. And had they not scored in the first half so quickly after the Damsgaard goal, I don't know how that second half would have turned out. The tension would have been much bigger, the pressure as well. But that goal, the Kier own goal, the way Kane drops, the run from Saka, the ball, the perfect ball that Kane, the ball through from Kane to Saka is amazing. And then they have to score. If it's not Kier own goal, it's a Sterling goal. So, but had that goal not come at that time, I think it would have been far harder for England. In the end, I think they deserve to go through, because as we said as well on Monday, Denmark in the second half were so tired. They don't have the same depth of squad. So when you make substitution, it's not the same level. And then eventually, for the last 45 minutes, pretty much of the game, they were defending. That's all they did.
We're going to get into a more granular look at these two semifinals in the Gab and Jules show, so download the podcast. But before that, we have to talk about the incident, because afterwards, I spoke to Kasper Hjulmand. He was absolutely dejected for what he saw as a key moment in the game. Now, I'll give you my own view. I think England deserved to win regardless, on the balance of play.
But it's not a pen.
It's not a penalty. This is never a penalty, in my opinion. Mm. And at the very least, it's a typical situation. We've seen this happen once before with Michael Oliver, in fact.
Yeah.
If you use a VAR, let the referee have another look. The stakes really are that high. There were also two balls on the pitch just before that, where, again, It's not a hard and fast rule, but it is customary. Referee, stop play.
Yeah.
Because they were very close to each other. You can say they weren't interfering, but the other ball is right there.
Right there, yeah.
And then later, obviously, there was a laser pointed in Schmeichel's face, which, well, he still saved the penalty. But we agree that this was a mistake. This was a turning point.
I agree with you. I was even more surprised how quickly the ref, Danny McKinley, who's a very good ref, there's no doubt, gave the penalty. Almost like if he went straight in, not even, I don't know, processing in his head maybe for 2-3 seconds, 4 seconds.
But that's what good referees do.
Exactly.
They watch so closely and they decide straight away.
But then I think this one was a mistake. And then I think because he rushed it a little bit, it looks like he rushed it a little bit, go and have a look at the screen. It costs you nothing. Instead, because I guess they considered that there was not a clear and obvious error.
Not considered a clear and obvious error.
I think it's really harsh. I think England would have won anyway, not on pens, before they would have scored a goal at some point. But that way is a bit disappointing.
They certainly had enough chances, and Schmeichel was Schmeichel did come up big. All right, Jules, let's get into these games a little more. And I want to go back to the way Italy prepared for this Spain game. And it was almost kind of like a double bluff, because we'd heard so much until that point about how confident Bonucci and Chiellini were going to be against Morata because they played him in training. Which, by the way, as we found out after Morata came on, that kind of works both ways.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I know we're not supposed to say anything negative about Bonucci and Chiellini. I got in big trouble for saying it. But I think there was some responsibility there, certainly on Morata's goal. Defensively.
Oh, massively. And you can see Jorginho even pointing, because he's on Pedri. He says someone has to switch and go on Morata, who was dropping a little bit deeper, and just no one follows. And by the time it's too quick, Morata can control the ball, turn, and then runs at the goal with the ball, and then it's a lovely 1-2. But yeah, I think either one of Bonucci, Chiellini should have been far closer to him than what he did.
What was interesting to me was afterwards, the standard was, Italy revert to type to see out the game, right? So Italy go back to being the old style Italy of defend and counter. And I think this is one of the interesting things about Mancini, is this is not how they want to play, and it's not how they were supposed to play even then. Bonucci came out and said that the two chances that Spain created in extra time were because Italy dropped too deep. Yeah. And Bonucci said, it's my fault, I'm the captain of the defense. I'm sure Chiellini appreciates that. But he says, I shouldn't have allowed it to happen. They pushed us too deep. And I thought that was really interesting because, on paper, Bonucci and Chiellini should be happy just to defend really deep on the 6-yard box like they're freaking Burnley or something, right?
Yeah.
But even then, that's not this mentality.
No, it's not. I just do wonder at some point, with tiredness, with the pressure and the result at stake and all of that, if even without wanting it or thinking about it, you just drop a bit deeper, because technically, it's easier to defend the deeper you are, which should be. But clearly, on the Morata goal, certainly it cost Italy, because had Chiellini and Bonucci being a bit higher up, I think they would have dealt much better with the 1-2 with Olmo.
Luis Enrique said after the game, he said people were crying, and he basically said, don't cry. Why are you crying? We just did something really, really special.
Mm.
This attitude about the performance is more important than the result. Personally, I've changed my view over the years over this.
Yeah.
I used to be like, oh no, the result is all that mattered. But now I've come to realize, actually, that if you play well, you generally win. And I've come to appreciate randomness in football. And I think for Spain to put on that performance against a team that were, undefeated in 32 games or whatever it was, a team that had defended so well, a team that I think psychologically, even though Spain obviously broke the Italy hoodoo over time and beat them 4-0 in 2012, it's still there. It's still very real.
Yeah.
I thought this was a tremendous performance. They read the game well. And even the opportunities Italy had on the counter, they did have opportunities on the counter later. Italy just aren't suited to do that.
No. I mean, and let's not forget that this Spanish squad didn't train together before the Euros because of the positive test, COVID test of Busquets and Llorente. That Luis Enrique had been out of the game for a while because of the death of his daughter. So all that adversity as well, going into this tournament where none of us put Spain as favourite or even close to being favourite, and the way they turned their very too slow first games in the group stages, where they had a lot of the ball but didn't look as good as what we saw in the quarterfinals.
I gotta say, I picked them up after the first two games.
Yeah, me too. We
thought,
praised
them. They're doing fine.
But it was not the level that we saw against Italy. No, you know, nowhere near.
No, nowhere near.
But I think they deserve so much credit. And this is a team that can win 2022 and 2024 like Italy would, or even England. This is a team that is going to be even stronger in 18 months' time, 2 years' time, whatever you want.
What impressed me too about Luis Enrique was, you know, we really hammered him for his choices when he selected his squad, right? For not selecting 26 players, for no Real Madrid players, yeah. No Nacho. I looked at this, I'm like, Sarabia, really? You know, Eric Garcia, come on, right? But he was vindicated.
It was, and this is his tournament. And you know, we talked a lot enough on the show about the manager who were rubbish in this competition, and oh my word, there were a few. But also, we need to give a lot of love and credit to the one who've made it against all odds, or against adversity, or against the opinion of their own countries. I mean, how many times has he been slagged off in Spain after the first two games? It's incredible. And yet, he kept his idea. It was a masterclass to play Dani Olmo as a false number nine against Italy. That almost worked. Okay, it didn't work, but it almost worked. Pedri was fantastic. Busquets was fantastic. Not so sure about Eric Garcia, but a lot of the choices that he made paid off. And the next thing, I think, and this is something that is, for me, too underrated, you use set pieces coaches, you use throw-in coaches, you use psychologists for players who need to talk and need to express themselves. Use penalty specialists, please, because they exist. They're there. I saw Alvaro Morata, and this is the only example, and it's not to pick on Morata, but Morata, when the referee blows the whistle for him to take his penalties, the whistle has not even finished, that he's already running towards the ball to shoot it. Take your what? What do we always say? Take your time. Don't roll your eyes. This is very important.
This is body language after the fact.
If you rush your pen, you're going to miss it. You're more likely to miss it. If you take your time, breathe. The referee has blown his whistle 5-6 seconds ago. You don't care. You have all the time you want. Go and take it. Penalty shootout specialist is the next thing to come in the technical staff for a manager.
So you're obviously not one of those. It's just a lottery type.
It's what?
I don't believe that yourself.
Thank you very much.
I don't believe it's not a lottery.
Anything but a lottery.
I do think, though, that... And there are things you can do to improve, but I do think, first and foremost, players have to be comfortable. Some players don't want to sit and think about it. Some players want to go quickly. Some players, the more they think... You know, interesting contrast, right? Jorginho, cool as ice, right?
Yeah.
In taking the penalty.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's taken many...
Trae Young celebration.
Yeah. Does the Trae Young. They asked him, though, what did you do? Like, were you nervous? Why were you so cool? I was like, oh, no. I was really, really nervous as I started walking from midfield. And then I just told myself to breathe. And I kept breathing. Yeah. Breathing is important. And I just went up and I said, all right, you've practiced this. You've done this many times. Just do it again. Does a little shimmy. See Unai Simon on his backside. Yeah. Ball rolls into the corner, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, I devote this to all the people out there, especially some of our colleagues in the media, constantly going on about what a rubbish penalty taker Jorginho is because he missed that one penalty and so on.
I know.
Blah, blah, blah. Controversially, Lampard is Jorginho. I mean, come on. Get a freaking life. Don't repeat the same stupid talking points over and over again. Get an edgy. Watch the games and form an opinion. But anyway, what I'm saying is the Jorginho method works for Jorginho.
Yeah.
Morata has taken many penalties in the past. Yes, he missed one earlier. Evidently, this is how he wants to take the penalties.
But penalty
right?
shootouts are very different to a penalty in a game, Gab. I promise you, it is. It is. And especially when you shoot first, as I think it's 60-40, maybe 65-35 percent of success if you shoot first than if you shoot second. What have you made of the Chiellini, Jordi Alba, not I was going to say incident, but little come together with the referees? Because it looked that Chiellini was super confident and Alba was not confident at all before
we
the
need
pen.
To, yeah, we need to explain this because it was funny. So, for those who didn't see it, and it's out there, it's on YouTube, I think it's on the FC, it's on Twitter,
Everywhere, the FC
account. So, Chiellini looks like a crazy person going
into
the toss.
They're doing the toss.
So, they do two tosses, right? So, the first toss is to decide which side you're going to shoot at.
Yeah.
And the second shot is to decide who's going to go first.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I didn't know this.
Yeah,
I thought
yeah.
it was weird. I thought like, okay, I thought it would be like the beginning of the game where, you know, you flip a coin, whoever wins can decide if they want to, which end, or if they want to go first, you know, and then the other one gets, whatever.
But Jordi Alba, it looks like Alba doesn't know that there's two tosses.
Which is weird, because wasn't he involved in the penalty shootout before against Switzerland.
Yeah, but he looked surprised that unless he was not the captain, maybe for the Switzerland game, because Busquets might still have been on the pitch.
I don't know. I thought that was odd. He is joking about it. At one point, like, he's messing around with Alba. He's, like, laughing like a crazy person. He's saying, like, oh, he calls him mentiroso, you're a liar.
and his nose is so big. And
yeah, and Jordi Alba is like, you know, at one point, it looks like he's, like, picking him up and, like, throwing him.
And he's so big compared to Alba. It's like, uh-oh.
I mean, talk about psychology getting into his head. Now, obviously, it didn't affect Jordi Alba in the shootout. To me, it just spoke of Chiellini saying, you know what, this could very well be the very last time I put on an Italy shirt.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy every second. I'm going to make every second count. This isn't weirdo, dark art, psychological warfare. I think it's very simple. I think he's like, this is cool. I'm at Wembley. I'm playing for a place in the final. And this is it. I've had a great... I mean, I'm not saying he's retiring tomorrow. I think he's going to play
another
CBU. But I thought that was cool. That was nice to see.
We had a big argument on the FC show after the game with Frank Leboeuf and I think also Shaka Hislop, that they blame Luis Enrique for allowing Morata to take his penalty in the shootout.
Come on, man.
And I was like, but how? We were not on the pitch. We don't know the discussion that them two had. We don't know. Maybe no one else wanted to take a penalty. You know, Manuel Neuer took a penalty in the Champions League final because no other Bayern Munich player wanted to take one amongst the five. So you take it. So for all we know, Morata said, I want to take it. No one else wanted. Yeah, why would you blame Luis Enrique for letting him take it if he was confident? He's just scored a goal in the game.
I think, look, listen, we sit here, we spout opinions all day about stuff where we only have part of the picture. This is one area where, if you hear me doing this, then please feel free to pull me up on it and abuse me on social media. We are not in a position to know.
Exactly.
Luis Enrique, Morata, unless we find something out later, but we have no idea. If he felt, we don't know what Morata was like in training. Luis Enrique knows Morata better than you or I do, and I'm pretty sure he knows him better than Frank Leboeuf and Shaka Hislop as well.
Yeah.
If he felt that he was ready, he was ready. He's been vindicated. Morata has converted penalties before. He's done it. You know.
I'm with you.
Let's go over to the other game. I don't want to spend too much time on the decision, give too much importance, because in the end, on the whole, Denmark deserved it. But I do want to take, England deserved it.
Yeah.
But I do want to take a minute to talk about Denmark's journey in this World Cup, because I do think it's in this year's, because we do have to salute this.
Yeah.
You had certainly the Ericsson incident, which obviously was massive, definitely took its toll. You know, the fact that they're the first team ever to lose the first two games
and still advance
to the next round.
Incredible game against Russia, the third one.
You had the fact that they had to come back from Baku, and they were clearly not as fit as they would have liked to have been. And then on top of that, Hillman explained this afterwards, they made five substitutions before the 90th minute. And I thought, okay, this is weird. What's he trying to do? And he explained afterwards, he says, none of them were tactical. I was forced to make all of them.
Mm.
My players ran out of gas.
Yeah.
And I really felt for him a little bit, because there's a drop-off in quality. Once you get past, Delaney, Damsgaard,
Christensen, all of that. And already we noticed in some games that in second halves they were not as fresh, because they run a lot, they press a lot, their wing-backs go up and down. You know, even the three centre-backs often step in midfield and it changed to a back four almost. And you knew that there was a big possibility for them to drop the intensity in the second half. But if on top of that, which they did, already... You have to take off Damsgaard, potentially your most creative player for sure. Delaney, maybe him and Højbjerg, I think, have been fantastic all tournament, maybe underrated. But have to take one of them. And then Norgaard is a good player, Jensen is a good player, but they're not this level.
They're not. And then you have to take off Christensen. You have to take off...
Stryger Larsen came off and Vaz came on, took a yellow... 3 minutes in.
I think Stryger Larsen is much to write home about, there is a drop-off.
It's a change that you couldn't make when Jensen got injured, because you've made all your subs already.
And like, I'm not a big Dolberg guy, because I'm one of those people who got duped into thinking he was really good when he was young at Ajax.
Oh,
and then I'm like, where did you go? You know. But he was on fire. He is big and he is awkward.
And Braithwaite as well. I thought Braithwaite did really well.
When he came on, I don't know if he's not fit or whatever. You with Poulsen, you're not going to get quality, but you will get effort.
Yeah.
And I thought he just struggled. He really did not have an impact at all. when he came on.
He really struggled. It's a shame because it looks like this was the game too much, or the one game too many, really, because, like you said, they ran out of gas. They were against an England team that at some point was relentless, not always the best and not always the most creative, but they've got so much potential physically and get in your face when they have to. Plus the Sterling running at you all the time, the Harry Kane dropping, you know, all of that, I think, was just a bit too much for the Danes, and it's a shame. But it will still remember that as an incredible tournament for them.
Sterling, obviously, in tremendous form, really feeling it. I think I saw a statistic that he attempted 10 dribbles in that game, which is huge. Which is pretty much out of the
score. That's Messi's numbers.
Well, it's either Messi or it's a horrible footballer who thinks he's better than he is and keeps doing it over and over again. But there were other individuals where you realize, I don't know if Kyle Walker is bionic, because the way he's still sprinting in that way at the end of the game, his recovery speed is absolutely fearsome. He had one where Damsgaard went through, and it's like the guy takes three steps and catches him.
They're the fittest team, Gab. They've been the fittest team from the beginning. And for that, they deserve credit, Southgate and his team, to have got those players who, for most of them, have played 60, 65 games already this season. That fit, that strong physically, in terms of how much they run, how strong they are, how good they are in all the 50-50s, all the duels, is good. And that suits them. That suits the way they play.
I think we saw evidence of that also. I think he waited until the 94th minute or the fourth minute of the first period of extra time, which was actually like the 110th minute or something, because there was so much. I think that was it 6 minutes at the end, at the 90th minute of injury time.
I mean, Grealish came on first, but...
No, but I'm saying he waited to make his second substitutions, right? When, was it exactly. Foden?
Yeah,
Foden came on.
And
that really surprised me, Foden and Henderson. But then equally, I don't think England were struggling physically at all.
No.
Like, there was no reason. You couldn't really pinpoint... There were some players who weren't playing. I thought Rice was poor in that game. But there was no reason to change it physically.
No at all. Listen, I, as you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Southgate. Good if he wins it and if it took them that far, and he deserves some credit for it. I think the conservatism is... This reminds me too much of Deschamps, and it's a debate that has no winners and no end. But to take Grealish off the way he did, for me, it's not acceptable. You on top, you 2-1 up. The Danes, they're gone. They're finished. They play with 10 men. They're on their knees already. Why the need of...
This is interesting. Do you think this is a thing? Grealish's substitution?
Of course, it's tactical. There's no injuries.
No, but you think it is something worth talking about? It's because people have said like it's offensive to Grealish.
Why would you humiliate him that way? Why would you do that to him? And especially if you're 2-1 up, you can see the other way. He's going to keep the ball so well that he's actually going to be an asset to England keep the score 2-1 and keep the ball. And the Danes won't have the ball. They won't be able to put you under pressure. There's no need to bring Trippier on. What's that all about?
I'm assuming he brought Trippier on to cover his bases in case it came to penalties.
Exactly, that's my problem. But they won the game, so they would have won the game with Grealish. I just don't understand why you take off your number 10 when he's been on the pitch for 30 minutes, when you still have 25 minutes left in that game that you win it 2-1, and you're way on top. There's no need to do that. And I don't know, maybe Grealish is fine, but you could also see why Grealish would be really cross and not in the best mindset for the final on Sunday.
Well, he's not going to play him anyway. So,
I
don't know. Look, we can talk about this.
That was not necessary, I thought.
Again, I go back to my Luis Enrique point. I have no trouble criticizing Southgate for things that I don't understand or I think he does which are wrong or don't work out. And I've rarely had reason to criticize him for anything he's done as a person in terms of man management, because I think he's generally gotten all that right. I'm going to assume he knows something that we don't the Grealish. Maybe he knows Grealish well enough to know he's going to take it that way. Because I could also throw it to you, too. Who feels more humiliated? Grealish, who comes on, plays, and then comes off? Or Sancho, who sits there on the bench while he watches Bukayo Saka and Declan Rice and all these other players play?
Grealish, it's not a debate. Look, did you see Grealish's face on the bench?
Or Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who's in the stands?
I think Grealish's face, after he was taken off, 30 minutes after coming on, tells you the whole story. And maybe that's fine. They'll have a chat today, the day after the game, and clear the air or whatever. I just don't think it was necessary. That's all.
All right. Maybe it's a shadow of Wembley behind me, but I'm not criticizing Gareth Southgate for that. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, it's that time when we try to game plan. We try to predict what will happen behind us here in the final. We have two national teams that have a ton of identity.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any new injury concerns. Obviously, Spinazzola missing for Italy, but that already happened.
Yeah.
Formations, you just stop me if you start disagreeing. Italy are going to play 4-3-3.
Yeah.
We will see the same lineup as before. The one possible potential tricky wrinkle is Mighty start messing around, maybe Di Lorenzo on the left, Toloi on the right. I don't drop Emerson. I don't think so.
No, I mean,
although I will say this about Emerson, you wanted to see any kind of evidence. Look, I said it before, Spain deserved to win. Emerson on those counter, the one counterattack where he finds himself like at the edge of the box and he has no idea what to do because the ball is
exactly
rough.
The same.
Oh my god.
Exactly.
That wouldn't happen with Spina.
No, but it must be hard for him to come in and after one, Spinazzola has done so well.
Yeah.
Best left back in the tournament. The level that the guy before you was, and then you know you're currently at this level, so you have to raise your game massively and you know you might not be able to do it anyway. So I can see why he must have been a bit apprehensive before. And in the end, he didn't do too badly in the end.
No, he was fine. And look, it doesn't matter because Italy won. And by the way, we didn't give a shout out to Donnarumma before. I thought he was exceptional
in that game,
the same way he made some big saves in the previous matches as well. I thought the whole move to Paris Saint-Germain and leaving Milan was going to mess him up like it did at the Euros. Whatever it is, the guy's an iceberg.
So far, yeah.
So far, he's nothing at all getting to him.
Yeah.
So if Italy play that way, and we expect Italy again to play the way they did in the previous matches, controlling the midfield, obviously they tried to do it against Spain, weren't able to, but certainly how they played in the first five matches. And then, by consequence, we expect England to sit off the ball and rely on the pace of Sterling, Kane dropping deep,
Saka,
which is essentially what they did before.
Exactly. And same team as the one that beat the Danes, and same, you know, that team with Saka on the right, I think.
Because that is always the question mark, Saka. Sure about that?
Yeah, 100%. And he was key on the goal as well. I don't think there's any doubt that he will start again. And then you can always make all the substitutions that you want after 25 minutes, half an hour, take people in, back out.
So he's not going to make a substitution in the first half. So don't say after 25 minutes.
I'm not sure with him anymore, but certainly I think it'd be the same. And in a way, it's two identities that are very different, that almost complement each other, because I think if you want to go to Italy, you have to go and press them. We saw Austria doing them. And of course, they've got very, very intense presser of the ball, Sabitzer and Leiner and Schlager and all of that, which maybe is not the case for England.
Mason Mount is going to have to do, if you are going to play that way, he's going to have to do a lot of running and a lot of pressing off the ball.
I think if you let Italy have the control of that game and have a lot of the ball, I think you're exposing yourself to trouble if you're England. So why would you go and chase them, go and force them to play long like they did, that they had to do against Spain, because that's usually very counterproductive for this Italian team.
What I wonder about that is, if you're going to go and press like that, it's slightly more difficult to do, because you know Declan Rice is going to sit in front of the back four. He's not going to go and press anybody, right? He's going to sit.
But Phillips and Mount can do, Sterling can do, Saka can do.
That means Phillips just has to do a different job. When you go and press, there's always the risk that they will play through you. And I just wonder, because England have done almost no pressing in this game, a little bit in the Scotland game, it didn't work out.
Yeah, Croatia for the first 15 minutes.
And the first 15 minutes against Croatia, when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be so much fun to watch.
They can do it.
They do it intermittently. It was an interesting point from our colleague James Ollie, which I can see where he's coming from. He's talking about Harry Kane dropping off and, you know, Saka and Sterling coming in from the wings. He's like, oh, it's like watching Spurs play. Which
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, which it is. But the thing is, if for Kane to be at his best, he needs those runners. The problem is, for the first four games, really, even the Germany game, when he was dropping off, there was no runners. The other problem that it raises for me, Gab, is that what do you do with Mason Mount, though? Because every time Kane drops up, it's very often in the area where Mason Mount is. And yesterday, Mason Mount doesn't have a good game.
No.
And I wonder if it's because he's not sure exactly where to be and where to go in relation to the Kane's movements.
You go, I suppose the answer would be Kane drops off, you put Mount on Jorginho and Kane on Verratti. That would be the way you do it if you are going to go for that kind of all-out press. And then, you know, even if you win the ball back, Sterling and Saka will give you that pace to go behind. So what I'm in this segment, and we will get more into this, more granular on the Gavin Jewell show, from England, right? We've both lived here a long, long time. This is only the second time that England reached a final of a major tournament. Both times it was England at home. I mean, you know, Croatia have reached as many European finals as England have, and or World Cup finals, right? They've reached as many World Cup finals as England have, and they've only been an independent nation for, 25 years?
Yeah.
This football coming home, how are you living this? I'm not put off by it. I think it's a bit funny. I think they're kind of setting themselves up for failure. I think that there's this collective psychodrama over it. It doesn't bother me, but some people are bothered by it.
Yeah, some people don't like the song, "It's Coming Home," don't like the whole attitude. I don't care. Only Ethiopia and Israel have had to wait longer than England to go back to a major final. This is Ethiopia and Israel, right? I think this
tells you... This is the competition, yeah?
Exactly. This tells you how much, for how long they've had to wait. And when you think it's only their first one ever at Euros, you're just like, wow, really? For such a big footballing country. So it was about time, I guess. So let them enjoy it. Let's see what happens on Sunday. But you can't blame people for being happy that the national team is doing well. Whether you agree with the way they play, with the manager's decisions or whatever, this is a team that is uniting this country at a time where they really need to be united. So it's good for them.
And that's a message which Southgate has emphasized as well. Southgate's not been afraid to go out of his football box a little bit. And I think not everybody like that. Personally, I do.
Yeah.
All right, Joe's, one thing that I think we've seen in this tournament is the importance and the impact of the five substitutions. Mm. Not everybody liked it when it was introduced or whatever. I think it was necessary because of COVID. It does give managers so much more latitude to change things around. But one thing that struck me was, I was looking at England, and I didn't realize this, but it happened before against Germany, I think, as well. Dominic Calvert-Lewin isn't in the match day squad.
Oh, yeah, I saw your tweet. Yeah, you were not happy.
Well, I don't think I'm not happy. I just think it's such an odd decision. For somebody like Southgate, who, you know, we talk about attention to detail and everything, plan B. We defended him before because, oh, look, he puts on Trippier because Trippier's a better penalty taker than Grealish, or he thinks he is, or whatever. Fine. But Dominic Calvert-Lewin is the only center forward you have in your squad apart from Harry Kane. If at some point something goes wrong, you know, knock on wood, Harry Kane does get injured occasionally.
I'm with
you.
He
might get sent off, whatever. What happens? Who plays center forward?
Whatsoever.
I've heard arguments.
I didn't get it either. Didn't notice until I saw your message. But yeah, it didn't make sense.
Hey, what if you need an aerial threat? What if the other team puts everybody in the box and you just need to start going route one?
Exactly. I even go two up front. If you two go down with 25 minutes to go, you go two up front, Calvert-Lewin and Kane, and then you go.
The argument, I guess, is you have Rashford, but then Rashford isn't particularly good in the air.
No.
He doesn't seem to be fully fit in this tournament. And he's more of a winger anyway. Sterling can play up front. Foden.
But it's not the same.
Completely different profile.
Again, not against the three monsters at the back for Denmark, for example.
Yeah.
So I'm with you.
Why does he do that?
I don't know. But again, maybe there was something at training that we didn't see. Maybe he got a little knock like Saka did before the quarterfinal as well and could not be in the squad. And we just don't know about. But it was really strange.
One of the things that struck me about Mancini is that we've said he's not going to change. It's Immobile, Chiesa, and Insigne up front. He does have options on the bench. Part of me thinks, would he be better off taking Chiesa off the bench Chiesa's been so good, and he brings all that energy. I do wonder about that. Chiesa can change games when he comes on, obviously.
Yeah, but he changed game when he started
Tuesday. And I've come around to that. It's a quality issue.
I'm more worried about Barella because I just think that he's played so much this season, and his game is all about intensity and energy and running and be everywhere and never stopping and never breathe, and that it looked to me already in the quarterfinals, I thought it, that he looked a bit tired, and I thought it against Spain where at times he was chasing shadows because the movement of Koke and Pedri and Busquets was at times a bit too much for him, and I just wonder in what kind of physical strength or level he is going to be on Sunday for this final.
When we were talking about potential changes, I think that is the other one that might come into it. I think a lot is going to depend on how fit he is, how ready he is, what his state of mind is after that game. Again, you have to remind yourself, England's midfield are not going to do that. You know, it's going to be a different game. It's going to be more a game where Italy, like what we expect, Italy have the ball, Rice and Phillips sit off them or go press them, but then they play through them.
Yeah.
He's more suited to it. But it does make you wonder because, you know, in Locatelli and Pessina, you've got two other guys, or maybe even Cristante if you want to go more defensive.
Yeah.
You do have other guys who can play that role. So it's an interesting kind of knife edge that Barella's on. Speaking of knife edge, your boy Verratti, I always feel like he's this far away from a yellow card. But he's learning to stay the right side of it.
Yeah. I thought he was really good. There's a big debate in France over his impact. And I looked at some of the numbers against Belgium. 61% of his passes were in two touches. So control, pass. For someone who is often blamed for keeping the ball too much, too many touches, you know, coming back onto his own steps and stuff, I think there was 75% or something like that with three touches only. So it's a first touch, control the ball, then another touch, and then you pass the ball, which I think, and going forward as well, a lot of those passes were forward. I think he's been brilliant. I don't know physically how he will be on Sunday. He had like a strapping on his knee, the knee that he injured at the end of the season, which made his whole participation to this tournament very doubtful and could not play at the start of the tournament anyway. So, but I do think that Verratti would be such a key part. But again, I think the hopes for Italy is that even with Jorginho not at his best against Spain, without Verratti at his best, with no Barella not as maybe fully fit, and they still won the game, even when they lost the midfield battle. So I think that has to give you a lot of optimism for the final.
One other point on Italy, before we make a final point in England. Ciro Immobile, we've talked about it before. He is a confidence guy. The reason Mancini always waits to take him off is because his head then drops. Is it a problem how long it takes him to get a shot off, the fact that it's just not working for him? And I thought it was indicative in that game when Immobile came off, Italy basically put Insigne at center forward for a while.
Yeah,
and then Belotti.
And
it's also because Belotti gives you a lot of effort, but you know, and he's got the cool nickname, the Rooster.
But
you know, he's still Belotti, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that a problem? Should they?
No, we've seen Mancini played with Bernardeschi as a false nine before, or Insigne for half an hour.
I don't want to see a false nine.
No, I don't want to see either. But Immobile gives you a lot more than Of course, he struggles sometimes with his chances. He takes a long time to shoot. But the Chiesa goal doesn't come without Immobile on the pitch either.
No, he gives you
without
a lot of stuff
run
off the ball.
You know, the run, he gets those two centre-backs so busy. He's going to be such a nuisance for Maguire and Stones. And he might not score, but you know that he's going to, you know, really put his shift in and run all the time. And then you can play long and he's going to chase the ball and down the channels and all of that, which I think is very important for a striker.
I wonder, I'm going to say this, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I wonder if we might not see at some point, depending how the game goes, Raspadori. Simply because this is a guy...
You can't.
Two caps going into... No, I don't mean to start. Two caps going into the tournament. I think he played a couple minutes in garbage time against Wales, but that's it.
When they all came on, something.
But he is completely different to Belotti and Immobile. And I think it's not something anybody's expecting. I almost wondered against Spain if maybe... I understand the Belotti choice because Belotti can hold the ball up and finally you can, in theory anyway, you can release some of the pressure.
Yeah.
And also, Raspadori against quick defenders like Eric Garcia and Laporte, maybe not the best match. But I just wonder if that might not be, because I know Mancini really likes him.
Yeah, maybe.
Really likes what he's done. finally, on the England point, and I raised the Declan Rice issue because, at the start of the tournament, you went with Rice because Henderson wasn't fully fit. And I don't have an issue with keeping Rice if he's performing. I did feel like last night, Rice was maybe the only England player who had a poor game.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean with the ball, because we know that he's... I don't know if he's limited with the ball or he's just asked to do that. But I do wonder, Henderson's fully fit. Henderson gives you love. Henderson's got the experience. Is that a change you would make?
I would change one of the two, Rice or Phillips. But again, this is not my cup of tea. This is not the way I would set up my England team if I was Southgate right now. I would not play like this. So it's very hard for me to say, but I would not start... Or then you would not start Mount and you play Henderson, Rice and Phillips.
Oh my God, that would be horrendous though.
But then,
you're England, you're at home and you play...
Yeah, yeah. But that's why I would not pass Southgate to do
something. Why do you do that and then also play a back three then while you're at it?
But I would not pass Southgate doing that.
Put fullback. I mean, seriously, come
as
on.
As wide players, as wingers. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think he would keep exactly the same team. I don't think he would change anything. And talking about teams, just at the end, there's this new trend on TikTok. I don't know if you've seen it, where you film yourself. You've got the two starting lineups, and you point with your finger which one you would pick amongst the two. Right. So we're not going to do that because it's a podcast. But you'd have to tell me who you would pick, okay, with the names that I give you.
Okay.
So Donnarumma or Pickford?
Come on, Donnarumma.
Okay. Walker. Or Di Lorenzo?
They're actually very similar players. I'm going to go Walker.
Okay. Would you go Shaw or Emerson? We can't go for Spinazzola. It has to be the team that plays. So Emerson or Shaw?
Can I say neither?
No. You have to give one. Imagine with your fingers, you point out what you want.
I'm pointing Shaw.
Okay, pointing Shaw. Are you pointing Chiellini or Stones?
I'm pointing Chiellini.
Okay. Are you pointing Bonucci or Maguire?
Maguire.
Nice. Are you pointing Rice or Jorginho?
Oh, come on.
Are you pointing Verratti or Phillips?
I thought Phillips did really, really well, but I gotta go Verratti.
Are you pointing Barella or Mount? And don't be biased. Now be objective.
I genuinely feel like there's not much in it at all between the two, but since I have to pick one, I'm going to lean Mount.
Ooh, are you pointing Kane or Immobile?
Kane.
Okay. Sterling or Insigne?
Sterling.
Nice. And then finally, Saka or Chiesa? We suspect Chiesa.
Obviously Chiesa.
Nice. That was nice. That was good. I like that.
You're not going to ask me Southgate or Mancini?
that would be embarrassing for myself.
All right. One last point on Mancini, just because Bernardeschi put it really well. When Mancini took over, Italy had missed out on qualifying for the World Cup. Mm. I was depressed. Bernardeschi, after final whistle, said, you know, he first Italy squad, he said, like, I think we can go and do something important at the Euros. They're like, yeah. Some back in the room said, look at this idiot. He's either a liar or he's crazy. And Bernardeschi said, that was the crazy man. He's not a liar. That was the crazy man who believed. And he's been proven right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Last day of the Euros, baby.
Yeah.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, enough Euro 2020, Jules. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
Brazil are through to the final of the Copa America after beating Peru 1-0. Jules, it's Lucas Paqueta again. Not a packet, clearly. But it's your boy Neymar, who's on fire.
It was fantastic, them two linking up together. The Ligue 1 boys, you know, best league in the world. What else can I say? Fantastic from Neymar and Paqueta. Paqueta, who also scored the winning goal and only goal in the quarterfinals. And then doing it again against Peru. It was not always pretty, especially in the second half. They were put under pressure. Gareca, our boy, did a really good job again with his Peru team. But in the end, Brazil, I think deservedly, will be in the final against Argentina, because Gab, Argentina take it to penalties to eventually overcome Colombia after drawing 1-1 in the game. Lionel Messi doesn't look like an unemployed guy, old guy after a long and hard season though.
No, he looks really sharp. He looks really, really focused. He went to penalty. Emiliano Martinez had to make some big saves. Look, this Argentina team, they are imperfect. And Colombia, yeah. I think, and I said it before the tournament, remember you had Uruguay beating them? No, I believe in Los Cafeteros, and I thought they played really, really well. This
great
was
goal
a
by Luis Diaz. Fantastic what? Goal.
Luis Diaz is a bit special,
wow.
isn't he?
Very special.
This was a classic Copa America grinded out, I thought. It does set up an interesting final because obviously it's Neymar and Messi, great friends. You know, in Argentina, in Brazil actually, certainly not in Argentina, sorry. Ooh, is this the one where Neymar finally overshadows Messi?
Yeah.
Mate, you know what? Neymar, I think that window of opportunity overshadowed Messi's and perhaps...
That's true.
I think that's kind of come and gone, but...
It could be Messi's first trophy if you don't count the Olympics and the Under-20 World Cup. You know, I think he took part of 6 tournaments, Copa America and World Cups, and reached... 10 tournaments, reached 6 final. He hasn't won yet in the first 5, but that's pretty amazing.
You know, I wonder if he does win this tournament, he might even get a contract to play football next year.
Yeah, maybe a club would think he's not too bad.
Exactly. Although, again... We don't want to like making predictions, but no. I will say Brazil at home, favorite. Even without fans,
yeah,
obviously
of
overwhelming.
Course, of course.
Uh-oh. We're still waiting on that Kylian Mbappe contract extension, Jules. And some are suggesting that if he does go, that's okay.
He won't go.
Paul Pogba's coming back.
He won't go. He won't go. He would be there next season and finish the season. The extension is not going to come anytime soon anyway.
He's going to leave on a free after next season?
He won't. They're still hoping that he will sign. He can sign in November, December. He can do like Messi or Chiellini, not sign an extension.
You're complaining Kylian Mbappe with Chiellini who's 45 years old.
In terms of contract situation, you can still let it go and then still extend it afterwards. You don't have to extend it in July or August.
What about Pogba?
Pogba can come even if Mbappe stays. That's the idea. They like him. I think Leo and Mino are so good friends. That this has been discussed. They would need to sell players first, like, you know, Sarabia and Herrera and Paredes, maybe people.
Oh, yeah,
like
I'm
that.
Sure people are lining up around the
no,
block.
No,
they're not.
But you never know. It could happen. I would love to see Pog, Paris born and bred, back in his hometown. You know, that would be
Why
special.
Why did Mino just buy a stake in the club now and just plant more players there?
Now you're being mischievous, man. But back to Messi, because reports in Spain, Gav, are saying that Barcelona haven't been able to register any new signings. So Depay, Garcia, all of that, and possibly including the new deal for Messi, because of La Liga's salary cap, and they're way over the salary cap.
Yeah, so La Liga have a salary cap based on projected income. You can't go beyond that. It's a very technical and boring financial discussion. They need more money coming in. Obviously, Junior Firpo, they're waiting for that deal to be done.
Yeah.
I don't think what I'm told is this is not the concern. This is not a legitimate concern. There are other ways around it. And obviously, remember, if Messi doesn't sign, then you salary cap's not a problem.
No.
So I think this is gonna resolve itself. But it is more humiliation and more hardship for the club. And with the clock that ticks, they're going to be more desperate to shift players. So I think it's going to become more and more difficult for them to do so. Meanwhile, Eduardo Camavinga is the name on everybody's lips. Jules, is the Manchester United interest real? Or is it because, coincidentally, this is his first window with a high-profile agent like Jonathan Barnett?
Bit of both, Gab. I think they are keen on him because he's got only 1 year left on his contract. He's not going to extend a rent, so it's a good time to try to go and get him at quite a low price. But there's other clubs like PSG also interested. And the fact that he's with Jonathan Barnett, I guess, maybe opens some doors, you know?
He can write his own ticket at this stage. Very much so.
From one Jonathan Barnett client to another, Gareth Bale has denied reports that he's retiring.
Yeah, this is like an alley-oop where you're setting me up for the joke and say that, didn't he already retire 3 years ago? No, look, why would he retire? He has a year of getting paid.
16 million net.
Yeah, by Real Madrid, regardless of whether he plays, he doesn't play, whether he goes on loan somewhere. I would like him to go on loan. I enjoy seeing him play.
Me too.
I don't like him at Real Madrid not playing.
No. Nope.
I enjoyed the few moments that he wanted to play. We've discussed endlessly about what's happened with him.
We want him to be happy.
Time to move on. Ousmane Dembélé and Antoine Griezmann have issued an apology for a leaked video from a preseason tour to Japan. Jules, what's this about?
Yes, crazy, Gabi. It was in 2019, but it's just resurfaced in the last few weeks where they're being seen mocking a Japanese man who is a technician coming to fix their TV and their video console. You can hear what Dembélé says in French. Griezmann is only laughing at what Dembélé is saying and how he's mocking the guy. They've both apologized, but it's clearly not enough. Konami, who had a sponsorship deal with Griezmann, has not finished that sponsorship deal. Rakuten, who is the main sponsor at Barcelona, have been very disappointed and voiced their anger.
Rakuten and Konami, of course, both Japanese
both
companies.
Both Japanese companies, that's why. So I don't know where this will stop, but it's not a good look at all for the two players.
Is the implication that there was an element of racism or xenophobia
as
well?
They were mocking him for his origin and his background and all of that. La Liga boss Javier Tebas and Manchester City boss Pep Guardiola have been at it on Twitter. Gab, this is entertaining. We take the popcorn out and we just watch.
This is hugely entertaining, the back and forth here. Now, I kind of want to say to both men, look, you guys are both really important people.
Yeah.
You've achieved great things. This is kind of unbecoming. I'm not even 100% sure who started it. Basically, it was a combination of Pep saying that, you know, La Liga need to learn from the Premier League. Tebas saying, why don't you stick to what you know about? Because the Premier League's been selling rights collectively for 30 years. Yeah. We've only been doing it for 7. Also, of course, you know, United Kingdom is 30 million more people than Spain does. So obviously they're going to get more money from their domestic contract. And then, oh, and by the way, why don't you look at your financial doping at your club?
yeah,
which obviously
a
red
line.
Flag.
Yeah.
And at one point Tebas started... he started tweeting in Catalan. I don't know where Tebas is from.
Think he's from.
It's a weird one. These are issues that come to the fore, of course, when there's times of financial crisis.
Yeah.
I kind of want both of them. Either you sit down, you have a serious discussion, an open discussion about this, an open discussion about financial fair play and Manchester City's owner, an open discussion about what La Liga could be doing better, what they've done wrong, because you both care about Spanish football, presumably. Or otherwise, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
After several false starts, including quotes that were published and then taken down, can we say Sergio Ramos to Paris Saint-Germain is now official?
It is. It was official on Thursday morning. The new monument in Paris. That's how L'Equipe put it. A new monument in Paris. I love that. I don't care how old he is, that he was injured. I don't want to hear you about it. It's great. Milan have made Sandro Tonali's move permanent from Brescia, but Gab, they're still sweating on Franchesi though.
Yeah, so the Tonali deal, it was one of those deals where they got him on loan, they were going to pay later, and then didn't have the best season, they weren't sure, cash, blah, blah, blah. They got him in, that's important. Kessie one, this is one to watch, because he's one of the many guys from Goretzka to Mbappe to Pogba.
One year left
on his contract, and naturally, he's had a tremendous season. Naturally, he wants a big pay rise. They're talking 5 million euros net, which again works out to, if you're English and you can only think in terms of gross pounds per week, it's around 200 grand a week. I think this is something where you need to pay up, make sure it's a long-term contract though, because you don't want to face another Donnarumma situation in a couple years.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Hossam Awar to Arsenal rumor is back. It was like clockwork. They tried to get him last summer. Ended up with Thomas Partey. By the way, when I say they ended up with Thomas Partey instead, I get in trouble because Partey was always a massive target. I'm like, okay, all right, whatever. So I just say they ended up with Thomas Partey.
Yeah.
Can they make a deal now? Or is it just a coincidence that this surfaces?
It's not.
While Emile Smith Rowe hasn't signed a new contract. And according to well-informed sources, Aston Villa have made a third bid for Emile Smith Rowe.
He's not going to go anywhere, Smith Rowe. And that's not a coincidence at all. It's just that there's still like Kusamawa, who has only 1 year left on his contract. He's part of that one-year club.
Like the one-year club.
So he would be cheap, maybe 20 million euros, 25 maximum.
Why don't
bonuses?
They sign Frank Kessié instead, who's a far better player and also has a year left on his contract?
That's a good idea, though. It'd be interesting.
Ralph Ragnick. Wait, let's not move ahead. We haven't discussed Nuno Tavares and Lokonga.
They're young players, they're ones for the future. I like that, the fact that they are, you know, scouting in a different way now, looking for the next big thing. It's really good for them.
Why are they scouting in a different way?
Don't try to get me in trouble.
Why are they scouting in a different way? But it's a serious question. I won't get you in trouble. But it's the same people who are in charge, right? In terms of scouting in a different way.
This is Edu's you know, without it, I guess, first proper summer when they can properly sit down. Last summer, they were obviously together, working together, but they've had more time to work on this transfer window. They've identified Lokonga a long time ago. He's a young player, Anderlecht, with a lot of promise and a lot of talent. But instead of going and spend 40 or 50 million pounds on someone who's 26, 27, they go for a 21-year-old who will cost them 20 or 15 and bonuses and gamble on that, if you want to call it a gamble, for the future.
Okay. Same, so the money they spent on Partey a year ago.
But you can't have only young players.
No, I'm kidding.
Ralf Rangnick is back, Gab. He's at Lokomotiv Moscow. And with all due respect, we would have expected him to go for something a bit better than that, right?
You know what? The clock is ticking on him. He's getting older. I'm sure
he
would.
Money or what?
What?
He needs money or something?
He doesn't need money, no. So, but he's been on the sidelines now for a while, right? I think he really thought he could do something with Milan. He was close. Then obviously he went, and you know, I think he was interviewed for the Spurs job, or certainly put his hat in the ring for that. His role again, he's not there to coach. He is chief of football, God, Lord of everything.
Yeah, even the hockey team, I'm told.
It's hard when you come in and you say, yeah, I only want to work in these circumstances. A lot of clubs are going to be reluctant
to give you the keys.
But I'm glad to see him back. Maybe he can do something special. I mean, it doesn't really seem like a cultural fit. But who knows?
Yeah, he's worked in
harder situations before. And of course, he has experience in former communist countries. Pedri's contract expires next summer. Pedri, who you're praising to high heaven.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Though, we should point out, Barcelona do have one of those two-year options to extend on his youth deal through 2024. Jules, they're not going to screw this one up, are they?
They can't. They can't, Gab. Not when they have such a big diamond on their books. I don't even want to hear about that two-year option to extend the deal. Give him a brand-new five-year deal with a lot of money because he deserves it. He's there for... You can have him for 15 years. So show all that confidence in him right now, even at his very young age. I'm a bit scared, to be honest, that he's going to play too much. Now he's off to the Olympics. And I'm like, whoa. He's already played, I think, 66 matches this season. Adds two friendlies plus the three group stages in the Olympics. If he plays everything, I'm a bit worried about his fitness and everything. But hey, he's such an incredible talent. They surely can't screw this one.
No, and he does. Like, I know we judge him from afar. I don't know the kid, but I go back to the story about him hailing a cab after the game with a plastic bag with his boots inside. You know, he seems cut from a different cloth.
He's a good one. Salernitana have been given the go-ahead to play in Serie A this season, next season, whatever, after they got promoted. But the club have to have new owners by December 31st or they will be kicked out. Gab, we mentioned many times this story before. They have the same owner as Lazio, Claudio Lotito. Is this a win then for Lotito, Gab, or a lose?
It's an absolute win.
He still has to sell, though.
I honestly don't... Does anybody really believe that if on December 31st, okay, first of all, yeah, he has to sell, right? So on December 31st, he's going to take his idiot nephew or his cousin or his brother-in-law or you know, whip out some other version of the trust. He's going to tie it up with lawyers until the end of the season because he knows Serie A aren't going to say halfway through the season, okay, Salernitana, you're now pulling out.
Yeah,
you're
all those points that you've won, we've taken them away from you.
You're gone. Yeah. All you players, right, who have contracts, oh yeah, it's all invalid. They're all gone. It's just not going to happen.
Only in Italy you
He should have never been allowed. He knows how to manipulate the legal system. He gets his way, which is fine. The one thing they can enforce is the no business with Lazio thing, and they should enforce it. They should not. That is realistic.
Yeah.
And then give the ultimatum for next season. Hopefully Salernitana get relegated. We never hear about this ever again. But this is an embarrassment, it's not good.
I agree.
Lille have a new manager. Jocelyn Gourvennec, who has a girl's name. Was he named for Jocelyn Angloma?
It's not a girl's name.
No?
It's not.
I always did, when I was a kid, I did wonder about Angloma, because he was the first famous Jocelyn.
Yeah.
And he was definitely not
so
a girl.
So you've got Jocelyn, but you need an E at the end. Jocelyn doesn't have an E at the end.
I see.
You know, like Gabriele and Gabriella, for example.
That's very, very true. I kid Gourvennec and Angloma, if you're watching, because I get mail addressed to Miss Gabriele Marcotti all the time. Okay,
yeah,
so
sure.
However, it strikes me a bit odd that the champions of France, and Lille still are the champions of France, should choose a guy who didn't coach last year. In his last job at Guingamp 2 years ago, he was relegated.
Yeah.
What's the deal here?
Underwhelming. I agree with you, Gab. A lot of the fans are not happy. He's someone who started really well his career as a young manager. Bright ideas, innovative, a lot of energy, everything. Started really well at Guingamp before the second spell that was really bad. And then he lost his way. Went to Bordeaux, that was a disaster. Back to Guingamp, that was a disaster. And now, when Claudio Ranieri, for example, was in the running, where Lucien Favre was in the running, they went for him. It's a huge gamble. But they liked his personality. They liked his energy when he was interviewed. So we'll have to see.
No, I'm curious because we always hear about Lille, obviously the model club with the transfers, Luis Campos. And I mean, this wouldn't be Luis Campos, presumably.
No, he's not there
selecting
anymore.
Him.
It's a different, yeah, it's the new ownership.
He's always there. He's never not there.
Anymore. He's not.
He's
there
always
anymore.
Consulting. Is he
not? No, not anymore. No,
so there's a new ownership. So like the Dutch guy with the other fund, right?
Yeah.
Since we're not 100% clear who actually owns.
It's just not Gerard Lopez, our friend, who is now at Bordeaux.
Yeah, Gerard Lopez has moved on.
Yeah, moved on. And Olivier Letang is the new president, and he just really liked Gourvennec.
Olivier Letang, who's Kia Drapchin's former business partner,
exactly.
And before that was at Paris Saint-Germain.
Sporting director there, assistant first, and then in the main role. So let's see how he does as a president, you know. The US women national team beat Mexico 4-0 with one incredible collective goal, team goal, by the way. You can check it out on our website. But Gab, some people were unhappy at what happened during the national anthems.
Yeah, so look, obviously there have been a lot of issues about what people do during the anthem, specifically in the US. What happened is, and this is something that the story got so far away that the US Soccer Federation had to intervene to set things straight. But basically, the national anthem was played on a harmonica by a World War II veteran, this older gentleman, must have easily been in his 90s. And the custom, I guess, in the U.S. is to turn and face the flag during the anthem.
Yeah.
Some of the players turned and faced the flags. Others, I think out of respect, since, you know, he was there in his wheelchair and his harmonica a few steps away, they looked at him while he was playing. And so some media outlets incorrectly reporting, oh, look, they're disrespecting the anthem, they're not looking at the flag. But I have my own personal view, which is, I'm not even sure.
Why would you such problems when they're...
Why would you create these
exactly.
issues out of nothing? You know, I think it is really important in general, because of what the anthem means to people, that whatever you do as a team beforehand.
Yeah.
Unless you want to make an individual protest, which was not what was happening here.
No.
But for people to go and weaponize the anthem and the fact that, you know, the women who did not turn to face the flag were paying their respects to a World War II veteran who's still with us, who went and put his life on the line to end the bloodiest conflict of the 20th century. I just find that absolutely, absolutely appalling, and well done to the US Soccer Federation for immediately stepping in and saying, this is what happened. All right, Jose, I apologize in advance because I have no idea how to pronounce his name, but Oakley Cannonier, or maybe Oakley Canonier, I have no idea. Sorry.
Yeah.
He was the ball boy who helped Trent Alexander-Arnold take that quick throw against Barcelona 2 years ago in that epic 4-0 win. He has now signed a professional contract with Liverpool. Jules, look into your crystal ball.
It's lovely.
How likely is it that he'll surpass his previous contribution to the club?
I've got no idea. I've never seen him play at youth level. But what he did for that corner against Barcelona was fantastic. So even if he doesn't surpass that, this will always stay in the history of the club.
It's such
anyway.
A sweet story, isn't
so
it?
So it's a great story. Good luck to him with his first professional contract. Obviously with the youth team still at the beginning. But let's hope that he's got a great future at the club. Super Mario is back in the top flight in Turkey, Gab. Mario Balotelli has signed a 3-year deal for Adana Demirspor. Are you happy? Are you going to push the Turkish
I know very little
Super League
about him. I know they've just been, I think they were just promoted. He was at Monza last year in Serie B. I don't know what's going on in his head. The numbers of his wages are enormous, but who knows if those reports are accurate. I just want Super Mario to be happy,
exactly.
to give us that smile, to
exactly.
warm our hearts. If it's going to be in Adana, then
so be it.
So be it. Why
Younes
not?
Younes Belanda as well, they've signed. You know Younes Belanda, the Moroccan international?
It's so turning into a little super club, Adana Demirspor.
Link up well too.
How about that? That looks real solid. Right. We got to be back because we'll be here for the final.
Yeah.
And we got to come back on Monday when we will know who the new champions of Europe are. Italy or possibly England. Time will tell. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.